Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. I am back again with Dom. Dom, I really never thought we would see the day, but before we get into all of that, how are you? Have you recovered yet from Wednesday night?
I don't know. This is meant to be our moment of triumph. This is meant to be us obnoxiously, you know, alienating half of our fans and so on. But instead, I almost feel sad. I don't know. This is scary.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, as I'm sure, you know, we are probably going to be one of the last podcasts that people listen to on any given week. And I'm sure that's not going to be any different here. So I think we can, you know, when the moment is this big, forget setting everything up. I think we can just dive into Sandra is gone. And I can't believe a couple of things. First of all, that Sandra ever came back. And secondly, that Sandra survived as many votes as she did. I can't believe that it first, you know, for her to come back, that it took five or six episodes for us to be talking about Sandra actually leaving the game. This is amazing to me that she went to that many votes and survived.
Yeah, the first thing that I can't believe is it. I can't believe that Sandra's actually got voted out, that we got to see her pick up her torch and walk over to Jeff and get snuffed finally. Like, I was saying a few weeks ago, like, I just can't visualize that. I don't know what that's going to look like, even though we've seen the same like pose being done by hundreds of people already by now. And we finally got to see that this week, and it was kind of disconcerting, actually, just seeing that happen. And she, to her credit, she seemed to take it very well indeed.
I'm sure it was not a big surprise. Like, she was saying in her exit press, like, yes, I understood that this was a very realistic possibility that I would end up leaving soon. And we saw her give the same thing Amanda Kimmel did when she finally got voted out, although hers were on the heels of two back-to-back losses after day 39, where she gave Jeff the, oh no, do you really have to do it? And I think, actually, interestingly, I think, of course, via Jeff Pittman, they both tied Amanda for the number of tribal councils attended without getting voted out. We don't have a clear longevity winner one way or the other. We have a tie at the top of that record book.
That I was going to say that surprises me because like Amanda was just after the merge in Heroes vs. Villains. I guess you would only need a few tribals here or there across three seasons to throw that out of whack. So
right,
and yeah, also, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I guess Amanda's season started with 16 people, but then I realized so did Pearl Islands also started with 16 people, right? So yeah, I guess
but back in the day when they ever still did that, yeah. But the second thing I can't believe is that I'm actually upset about Sandra leaving and that I actually walked out the door. I had a lot of respect for like her as a player this season. I was certainly not expecting that coming in.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you, and I think we will definitely get to all of that, but a very, very big episode, I know, Dom, not only for us, but just for the course of Survivor, to have Sandra, you know, the queen will stay queen. Well, the good news for her fans is 2 out of 3 is still better, more wins than anyone else has, so this is still fine as far as, like, the record book is concerned.
Right, all the people who were saying that Sandra was a queen before the season, none of them have changed their tune, and none of them are going to. Like, I don't know what would have had to happen for people to say, wait, hold on a minute, I'm actually taking this back, Sandra's not the queen, you know, go home, people, nothing to see here. Like, she's always going to retain that status in her fans' minds, and I can't really question that at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think one probably pretty big point in Sandra's favor is that she did end up deciding to go back for a third time when I think a lot of people would have said she doesn't have anything really to gain. Like, she's not going to be allowed to win or probably even really play too long to go back, you know, if she were to go back. And it really does seem like there was a distinct possibility that her reputation as a player would go down among the people who were looking so heavily at her results and, you know, the fact that she's 2 for 2 and won twice. I think the opposite happened. I think the people kind of more in our school of thought were the ones who came around and said, oh, it turns out there was more there than we potentially saw the first two times around.
Yeah, I think Sandra coming in, part of her, I imagine, genuinely did think she was going to win for a third time. But on some level, she had to know, like, it was only a matter of time until she got voted out. And the appeal of Sandra is, as Malcolm said, she just doesn't care, right? Like, I'm sure she knew that there were people out there who were going to change their minds one way or the other. It doesn't matter to her. I mean, she's won twice. She's got $2 million. She's got her adoring fan base. What more do you really need at that point? Who cares what person 364 on Reddit, you know, has to say about your game at that point?
Right, yeah, definitely. And I think we will have a lot more to say about Sandra's game as we talk through the rest of this episode, but I think let's look across a couple of different places. There, frankly, you know, for such a momentous episode, there wasn't a whole lot going on here. Even in an episode where we had a swap and we had Cochran back, a lot of exciting stuff and a couple of firsts in
exciting
survivor
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of firsts right. in survivor history, but one of these tribes, these new swap tribes, just got absolutely nothing at the expense of that. So as far as the actual game is concerned, it seems like we have far less than we normally would with which to work.
And so I think that's bad both from an analytical standpoint, because we just have nothing really to talk about from that tribe. Like we were saying, even with the tribe that lost this week, like let's say going ahead, Sandra's gone now, so maybe it's going to be Vana, maybe it's going to be like Ty or Aussie or someone, but like we just don't know anything. Like if someone asked you, okay, what does Andrea think about Aussie, or where does Sarah stand in this group, right, it's not even like you can have a wrong answer, because there's just nothing to speculate about. You can't have an opinion either way, because you have nothing to work with,
right? I think
It's coming off this the same thing we spoke about a while ago in Cambodia, of like this buy-on problem, where there were all of these relationships formed in the very early days on first buy-on that ended up affecting the game in a big way, but we just saw nothing of those. And so anything that comes later, you're left kind of having to piece it together, picking up the pieces afterwards, and it's just so hard to do that. And it leaves you not really caring about what happens to those people. So let's say Andrea somehow goes out in a shocking blindside next week. Well, I don't know who Andrea is. I mean, I remember her from her first few seasons, but solely in the context of Game Changers, what motive do I have to care about what happens to Andrea or substitute whichever name you like, really?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is kind of, to use an analogy I tend to find very lazy, a perfect storm of events here, Dom, where we have the swap coming together with Cochrane visiting and the exile twist, and of course we have to devote 12 minutes to that, coming together with Sandra, of course one of the most iconic players in the history of the show, finally gets voted out after having won twice before. I think they are definitely going to feel some sort of obligation, and I think correctly so, to give her a proper sending off in her eventual boot episode. And I think all of those things coming together just meant, you know, that those two or three days still passed within the game, and we just don't get to see anything of it.
Absolutely. And this should be the focus of the episode, and it can certainly carry the episode in the absence of anything else. My worry is that so far we've had a lot of big moves and big moments, and I would say 4 out of the 5, 6, 7, however many episodes you want to say that we've had so far. Like we had JT getting voted out with the idol in his pocket. We have Sandra getting voted out here. We have the whole debacle, if you like, with Malcolm. You have Tony getting voted out in the first episode. There are lots of these big moments, but the end result is we're left with most of the heavy hitters in the cast are either gone outright or just aren't really there on the show. So like coming into the merge, you know, we have like Brad and Haley and Sierra and Troy's, and that, it seems like that's likely to be this dominant group going forward. But then the people that I think a lot of fans were really excited to see, like Andrea, is nowhere. Aubrey kind of pops up here and there, but is basically nowhere either. Ceri gets literally nothing, and there's a good chance, I think, that Ceri just gets RC'd, where like she never goes to tribal, gets voted out the first time she has to, and then, you know, in contrast to RC, who is a pretty big character, we've just seen nothing of Ceri so far either. And like, why bring people back if they're going to make it that far in the game and you're just not going to give them anything?
Well, like, on the subject of Ceri, I think we did see her early. Like, I would say Ceri was the primary focus of the original Nuku tribe when they were not going to tribal councils. But at the same time, what we were seeing was, yeah, I love Ceri as a person and as a character on my TV show, but I would not work with her.
And that's a pretty low bar to clear, being the focus of the Nuku tribe, because who else was even in contention for that?
Like, I mean, Brad Culpepper was on that tribe. I guess he got plenty, too. There are certainly plenty of big enough characters on the Nuku tribe that they could have been showing us instead, I would imagine.
Yeah, but so we get this like decoy storyline of Ceri is maybe this early boot. We don't get to hear much from Ceri, and then as soon as the first swap happens, Ceri just drops off the face of the earth.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I much prefer living in a world where Ceri is still alive within the game Survivor, and even though she hasn't been very much on the TV show, at least she theoretically could be in the future, versus I will happily take that over Ceri is on the show, but it's because she's getting voted out now, and then she can't be in any future episodes.
Yeah, I will take Ceri being on Survivor over Ceri not being on Survivor. It's just that coming into the season, if you ask people what they want to see, a lot of it was Sandra versus Ceri, or just Ceri in general, Ceri somehow surviving and making it far. I don't think anyone had on their list Ceree makes it to the merge, but has been so under-edited that no one is even excited about it anymore.
Well, I think the difference is, I don't think no one is excited about it. I think all of us are excited about Ceree still being in there. I think Ceree, using some of that four-timer wisdom, just, hey, you can't get voted out if you are immune every single round. I'm loving that Ceree is just avoiding all of these tribal councils, and maybe she will get RC'd. Like, I think certainly one of the biggest takeaways has to be, to this point, that people who entered the season with a big reputation are the very clear early targets, and Ceree is definitely one of those people, to be sure, that stands out like that in the cast. But unlike RC, or unlike Nick Majorano, who can stay safe the entire pre-merge and then get voted out when they have to start going at the merge, Ceree has been to a lot of tribal councils before. I think there were certain elements of them being unsure about what to expect potentially that are obviously not going to be in play with Ceree.
Yeah, it's just that, so I want Ceree back on my TV because I want to see her work her magic on people, and she's never had to go to tribal, so we haven't needed to see that yet. And I also want to see her give great confessionals, and because they just don't give her any confessionals because she has nothing to talk about, you know, it's kind of underwhelming for me. Yeah. And I guess that's my concern with the season. So I think they've front-loaded a lot of the drama, whether that's just happened naturally because people like Tony get voted out in episode one, or because they kind of artificially force it with the twist that saw Malcolm go home. And I worry that we're going to get to like episode 9 or 10, and it's going to be like the only people we care about are going to be one or two random fan favorites, and then everything else is just going to be, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, you referenced it earlier, but it really looks like the power dynamic that could emerge is, you know, the power force that could emerge is Brad Culpepper, Haley Ford, Sierra Dawn Thomas, and Troyzan. Like, probably yeah. A lot of people's last four people in to this cast.
Going into the merge, the three idols are in the hands of Ty and Troy, which is not... I know there are some Troy fans out there. I know there are Ty fans out there. I don't think that's anyone's like preferred distribution of power, if you like.
Right. I would say that is a good indicator. Like, as we'll get to shortly, because I have a lot to say about Ty and his idols. Like, I think we are seeing more, you know, like we see all the time, and something that I always try to flag up is the people who are hustling for the idols are the ones getting the idols. Like, I think the fact that, you know, you have all of these heavy hitters out there, and it is Ty and Troyzan who are the ones getting them, shows you that the idol game is fairly straight up as far as they're not helping any particular players find them.
Well, let's get into that right away then, because you said that you want to see the players who are hustling for the idols get them, and I agree with that sentiment. It felt very much like Ty's second idol this episode. Yeah. He didn't have to hustle at all for it. He literally used the same clue, the same logic, just on his new camp and just got a new idol in the space of 10 minutes. There was literally no hustling involved whatsoever.
Yeah, because last week I brought up how confused I was by them showing us only Ty finding the clue and not any fallout from that later on in last week's episode. And now we see very quickly why that happened. And it makes sense because he goes and finds it at night. They could not edit it to make it look like it was, you know, just one trip out and he finds the clue and finds it. Like, they tend to just want to make it into one segment. But in this case, they clearly couldn't. And so he goes, because of course, Dom, when you need to find hidden logos on wet wood, of course, the time to do that is at night. So he goes out at night and, so, to his credit, totally seems to be able to do it and see it clearly, digs up that first idol, and then, you know, granted, there is a 2 out of 3 chance that he's not going to swap on to that last beach that still has an idol out there, but when he does, they still have plenty of time to do the math that, of course, he is going to go and check this well, too. He would be absolutely senseless not to do that. And to say nothing of the preseason claim that every idol is going to go in differently. Like, we've long since given up on that. But the idea that there was a time where they were saying, we don't want the people who have found the original, you know, the early idols to have any kind of leg up on the eventual idols. Like you were saying, this is them, as far as I can tell, basically handing an idol to Ty. And I think there may be something too. They like the idea of someone having two idols, specifically Ty, someone where it could go very wrong.
And someone who has been in the news, if you like, for his use of idols in the past, someone who you can rely on to be paranoid at tribal council or kind of get this idea in his head that he needs to do something. And you know that idol is going to be used for like dramatic purposes. It's not just going to rest in his bag for the rest of the season. The thing is, though, it's to me, and I think there is something to your argument that maybe this was, I don't want to say rigged, but at least allowed for the sake of good TV, because that's what we want, of course. But to me, the appeal of having these idols in different locations and having these different requirements to go and get them is you can't just sweep up all the idols like that. It's not going to be concentrated in the hands of one person. And if it was the case that, okay, the same clue is going to apply, but you have to go through some like Herculean effort to actually find it on each beach, that would make more sense. But with this, it's that there is literally no cost at all for spending 5 minutes pouring some water on the thing and scrabbling around in the dirt, because that, like, it's not...
He's at the water well anyway. He's already there filling up the water.
He can volunteer to go and get water, but he knows that no one else is going to follow him and just spend a minute digging for the idol. And it is literally free. There's no downside to it.
Right. And the reason, like, I think you put it well, they kind of allowed for this to happen. I don't want to call it rigged, but I do think that there are possibly some timelines. And I would say on Big Brother, there are, like, this would happen. I would say there are for sure people that they would rig things for and against. On Survivor, I have never really felt that way, other than such an early merge in Survivor Cambodia when it was Savage or Joey Amazing who was going to leave if they ran another pre-merge round. That seemed a little weird to me. But regardless, I think there are people in this cast that, like, if Haley Ford had been the one to, or someone who, take your pick of, to be that person to find the first one, I could see them saying, you know what, why open the door for that to at least happen where she could draw the blue buff and then would know to go get it. I think because it was Ty, they may have been more inclined to stay with that. And I think that would be probably not okay in my book, but I do, I guess, kind of understand that for TV purposes. And with that in mind, it's great, by the way, right? That Ty has these two idols. Like, this is, given the people who are left in the game, given that Tony finding two idols is not in play, Ty having two idols in here is going to be pretty fun.
I guess. So what would your preferred outcome be? Like, do you want to see him use these successfully or correctly to blindside people? Or would you prefer if Ty ends up being James Clement 2.0 and goes home with both of them, or at least one of them, but hopefully both of them in his pocket?
I think there are very real possibilities that Ty could be James 2.0. Is it Clement or Clement? Can we get some kind of clarification? Do you know this one way or the other? I have never known in all of my years.
I don't know, and frankly, I don't care. But yeah, if someone wants to let us know, then go for it, I guess.
Well, the one thing that I want to bring up, and I think it's a very valid point, and I think Ty would probably, I think he's a big enough Survivor fan to probably know about James and that James got blindsided with two idols. And he said when he found a second one, having two idols actually makes me more paranoid than having one. Like, the knowledge that he has that much power, even if the other people in the game don't necessarily know about it. I think Ty is, unlike James, going to probably be a player who, if he feels like there's a slight chance of him leaving, will play one of, you know, the first of his two idols. And we'll get to that later, because I feel like Ty probably, by the time this vote came around, would have done that if he thought there was any chance he would leave.
Yeah, it gives you more power. And then on the flip side, there's this ego consideration too. Like, if you go home, well, going home at all is bad enough. Going home with one idol is already a heinous mistake and something you're going to kick yourself over. Going home with two idols is a historical error that, you know, will go down in the record books. So I'm sure that Ty doesn't want to be that guy. Let me ask you a question.
Do you think we'll ever get to the point in Survivor where we see someone with three idols in their possession at once? Like, we know that three idols can exist within the game at one point. It seems I'm not going to use the word impossible, but it seems next to impossible to get all three of them in your possession. I could see an alliance doing it, but not one person.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about this the other day, and I think it's very unlikely that you get them naturally by finding the clues and then finding the idols. I think what would have to happen is you would have to give a reason for people to give you at least one, maybe two idols. And the only thing I could think of was, like, let's say you're the swing vote at the merge, and you know that both sides have an idol, and it's my vote is up for bids. The thing that could swing me to either side is you giving me an idol, and then, like, maybe you pick up two that way.
Yeah, I think it would take, you know, to do it organically, you would have to obviously swap onto all three beaches. And I love that that's at least within the realm of possibility. Like, there must be at least one person this season who's been at all three beaches, right? But you would have to get very lucky. Yeah, I don't know. I'm very confused by it myself. But you would have to get very lucky that no one else had found those idols leading up to that point, or that they had been played, like JT's was timed perfectly to be rehidden right when Ty swapped over to that beach. I think you'd have to get tremendously lucky for that to happen. I don't know. I think it would be we'll have to see a lot of seasons of Survivor play out before someone gets personal control of all three idols.
Yeah, it's like the exact scenario I pictured was if you are the sole swing vote and it's like an odd number of people, so it's like 5-5-1 or something, And then you throw your vote away, so it's tied 5-5, like with your one hinky vote somewhere. And then when Jeff asks if anyone wants to play the idols, you know, someone gets up and then you can like negotiate with them to give it to you instead. Because you can say like, I threw my vote away, I now have to lock in my vote, and this is the last time that you have to influence my decision. And then like, as soon as one side gives you the idol, the other one kind of has to as well to keep it even. But
you do have that open forum for talk for as long as you got, maybe not as long as you want to, but you do have that discussion time to potentially theoretically come to a unanimous decision. You know that they're going to at least allow you to make your pitch of why people should give you the idol.
Right, because you see people like negotiating with each other or discussing who should I use the idol on all the time. So that's like a one window in the game that never really gets to be explored that much. But anyway, yeah, move on.
Well, actually, quick sidebar along those lines is, as things stand right now, and I guess I will put it in the terms, and these are, you know, we could see this not even come close to being the case. We could see this rule play a factor three different times. But as things stand right now, if we don't end up seeing any first vote ties end up going to Rocks, or that rule come into play in practice at all this season, yes or no, will it be back for Survivor 35?
I would say yes, because if you put that rule in place, you want to see Rocks happen, right? Like, this is the whole point of changing it around. And I guess if you've changed it once, there's no harm to changing it again. And I guess after like three or four seasons, if nothing has changed superficially, then you can just change it back and see if that's better. But I guess like, this was what we spoke about when we talked to Josh Wigler. We said part of the impact of this is going to be hidden. So some of these votes that potentially could be tied just won't be tied anymore, because in advance people will have to make plans around it. So they might look at that and see, oh, we haven't had any tied votes, it's never gone to Rock, so this rule didn't change anything. When in fact, you know, behind the scenes, it actually did have a pretty big effect.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. That's why I said, you know, if we never see it in practice, I think there is no question that this rule will have a major impact on how a lot of the eventual post-merge strategy ends up playing out, is people not wanting to open the door for going to Rocks.
Well, it could, or there could just be like this dominant alliance of Pagongs everyone else, and it never even comes into question.
I guess so. So I guess let's get into this swap and how all of this goes down. We are told by Jeff that we are going to just be drawing random buffs, and this time there is no gender balance to be had or anything. Everyone's going to be pulling from the same pile. The new red team, which Jeff calls the orange team, but I've spent the entire season calling them red, so they are red forever for me.
This is we need like a Survivor Daylight Saving Time style ruling on this, I think. It is officially orange. Everyone has to comply, and anyone who doesn't is kicked off for good.
No, it's red, Dom. We're deciding on red.
Okay, fine, whatever. Fine.
All right, good work. 0-1 on the moratoriums. But so this new team is Michaela, Sierra Don Thomas, Haley, Aubrey, Sari, Brad, and Troyzan. And all we really ever end up getting to see of this team is that Brad and Troyzan pair being explored. What did you make of that, or any just general takes from this team?
So there were rumblings before Cambodia that Brad and Troy had this pregame alliance, which I think was pretty well substantiated. And then those rumors resurfaced again this season. And Sandra actually confirmed in her exit interview that she had a pregame final three deal with Brad and Troy. So it seems like that is pretty solid. And it may be the luckiest thing that happened to them, that Sandra got swapped into this bad situation and then voted out. Because if they had to deal with voting her out post-merge, firstly, it's Sandra, who often seems to find a way out of those situations. But secondly, like, I wonder if they genuinely did want to take it to the end, because they do seem like people who, for whatever their other qualities as players, do value loyalty and trust and so on. And it's like, that's how Sandra wins again, I think. If, like, Brad and Troy's on the side, yeah, we'll just take Sandra to the end. What could possibly go wrong? And then, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if Sandra had been able to navigate her way through to an end game where Brad and Troyzan are dying to take her to the end, I think I would at that point have to give it up that, of course, she is some secret genius that I am completely oblivious to.
Absolutely. So in general terms, we saw in this episode Brad saying he's worried about where this fourth vote is coming from, because he has Sierra, who's been his sidekick since day one. He has Troy now, who he's getting close with again. But this is three on a tribe of seven, and three into seven is out, or so I'm told. And they need this fourth vote from somewhere. And I think that fourth vote is going to be pretty easy to get, because even if Haley is a lost cause, and we don't know for sure that she is yet, you have Sari, who I think, just wants to make it to the merge.
Yeah, sign me up, baby. Whoever you are, yeah. I'm in with your three.
Anyone but me, as a wise woman once said. And then you know that Michaela and Aubrey are kind of at each other's throats, and so you have to think that one of them is going to be okay with voting off the other, so that's maybe a fourth vote you can bring in. So it seems like this tight group of three, if it is that tight, is actually going to have a pretty solid time here, because those other fourth votes can just never really come together.
Right, and I think that's something that I think we often talk about in terms of six-person tribes, and I guess this is a seven-person tribe, but we talk about how just a power duo or power trio is so impossible to overcome a lot of times, and that because there just aren't enough people left over to do anything about it. If this two or three people group person group is really that solid, it's a lot easier to just go with them. Yeah. Oversell how little they got, but did we see anything else that would give us? I guess we saw Aubrey immediately to start off the episode. We got Aubrey at camp after she had just been blindsided, and interestingly, actually, the previous Leon said it culminated in Sandra got her way again, and Aubrey was left in the dark, like, which didn't seem to play a huge role in last week's episode or this week's episode, other than this opening setup of Aubrey saying, you know, oh, Sandra got me, and I'm just out here trying to build relationships, but it seems like, you know, everyone that I bond with is getting taken away. Did you make anything of this, or what's going on with Aubrey here? Because it's at least not nothing, right? It's the beginning of the episode.
So I think she feels very glad to have a new lease on life and excited to have these new opportunities to mess around with. But we just don't know what she plans to do with those because we never hear from her. And her secret scene this week, she speaks about how she's, you know, there's a lot more potential now. But again, we don't know that there's no real specifics there. So it may be that once again, she's kind of relegated to the sidelines, just watching on as things happen around her. And that might be her whole story arc this season.
Yeah, it seems like we're not hearing pretty much anyone tell us how they feel about Aubrey, right? Have we heard anyone talk about, oh, I really trust Aubrey, or oh, she really sketches me out? It really just seems like Aubrey is obviously being a great narrator, and she is always interesting to hear from, but it seems like we're not hearing much about her.
That's actually a great point. So in Edric terms, her SBV, if you like, her second person, whatever the V stands for, we just don't hear anything. We hear very occasionally from her, but we hear nothing about her.
Yeah. I think that would be something that would concern me, but I don't want to discourage them from airing, you know, Aubrey stuff. I don't want them to think that, oh, now that we see Aubrey, all alarm bells are going off and suddenly the world is ending. I definitely love any time we get to see Aubrey, and I do think this could easily turn around. Like we've discussed ad nauseum, I'm sure, for a lot of the listeners, like in All-Star seasons, particularly if one of these people who was never in that good of a spot until they just got some swaps that went their way and then really turned it on after the merge, or in any season like that, not just All-Star seasons, what are they meant to show of Aubrey? Like none of her meaningful relationships have really developed yet.
Yeah, my overarching concern with this season is, are we just getting a series of like watered down Natalie Bolton edits where like someone like Aubrey is going to be invisible for seven episodes, pop up and have this one like episode where they're the shining star and then just get voted out again the next week? And is that gonna repeat for like Sari and Ozzy and Andrea and so on until we're left with the kind of second tier cast members, not to put too fine a point on it, at the end?
Right. I mean, it's definitely worth noting that all of the people who've been voted out so far, I would say, got a decent amount of exposure, with the possible exception of Caleb. I don't think he got a ton, and Sierra wasn't there for too long in order to get much. But I think she got, you know, plenty to at least explain why she got voted out. And it really hasn't been the case, I would say, that we've had someone just super under the radar the entire time just pop up for their boot episode. I think that, honestly, I'm optimistic that those days are almost gone as far as Survivor storytelling is concerned.
Well, it is a game changer season, so they can bring back some highlights from the past, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I maybe this is just the eternal pessimist in me, but I think, but maybe we've seen the best of the season so far, and I'm sure there will be fireworks at the merge. I'm sure the idols are coming to play and so on. But it feels like this season is leading towards this inevitable conclusion that no one is really going to be happy about.
Oh, I mean, it feels to me like the parallels with the original All-Star season couldn't be more clear. Like you have all of these big titans, all, you know, anyone who's won before immediately just automatically has to be public enemy number one. They're all gone pre-merge. Like, you know, Colby is gone pre-merge, the same way like Malcolm is gone pre-merge, like these big iconic players. And it just culminates in a couple of capable people leading around just a bunch of donks.
And speaking of Malcolm, based on the exit interviews that have come out since then, so with JT and with Sandra, it sounds like Malcolm was absolutely crushing it for the time that he was out there. Like, JT said, you know, Malcolm is my closest ally. Sandra was saying, like, Malcolm was my guy. He was the one I trusted the most. And the feud between Sandra and Aubrey kind of sprang up because Sandra learned that Malcolm was sharing a lot of the information that she and everyone else was giving him with Aubrey. And like, so Aubrey trusted him implicitly too. It seemed like everyone out there had Malcolm as their number one guy. And maybe he goes into the merge in the minority again, like in Caramon, and Brad would have executed him quickly. But it really felt like if Malcolm was able to kind of keep his footing for the next 2 weeks or so, he would have just been the easy front runner to win the game.
I definitely don't. I don't think I would argue with that. I think Malcolm, as we talked about when he got voted out and the reason why he got voted out is because he's just a tremendously capable player. And the reason you gave for why he just looks so good and why he looked like a possible winner is because he's always going to look that way. And I think like Malcolm is just very near the top of the list of like just most generally solid Survivor players out there.
Other interesting tidbits from the Sandra X interviews, by the way, they did eat the goat.
So
they're never going to show this on primetime. I understand that. But I feel like, and I would much prefer that they just didn't kill the goat in the first place. But given that they did, show that, make people confront their own feelings about it. And really, you know, that can spark a debate about Survivor as a social experiment that we really haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah.
It's like slaughtering a baby goat live on national television.
They started with the baby. They did the baby first. Yeah. Isn't that like... JT was like, no, the baby's going to taste better. Like, we didn't even get close to the truth on the TV show.
It's kind of grim to even laugh about, but, like, I feel kind of cheated that we never got to see the real conclusion to that, honestly.
I mean, I'm sure there are dark corners of the internet you could venture to, Dom, if you wanted to see a live goat get taken down and then eaten. But I think we were both on the same page of course, they're not going to show that on CBS primetime, nor should they. They should absolutely not show that, in my view, on CBS primetime. I think what they did was the correct move.
We were joking off air that if Sandra wins, we would have to kill a goat and eat it live on Twitch, but it sounds like they did that already for us, so there's no need anymore.
Right. What it began as... I asked Dom, if Sandra goes on to win, if you would, as a vegetarian, be willing to eat some goat, you know, in exchange for Sandra winning. And you said you would do it on Twitch. And then I upped it to, you have to kill the goat on Twitch, too. And he still very, very enthusiastically agreed. He said he would do it for free no matter what. So I don't know what that was about. That very terrifying, Dom.
I'm just a secret sociopath. Yeah. The final thing, I suppose, is I want to hear more about this pre-jury trip, because it sounds like with Sandra, Malcolm, JT, and Tony, and I guess Sierra and Caleb too, if you want to put those in there, that I want live feeds of that more than I want to see a lot of the remaining episodes, it sounds like, at this stage.
It sounds to me like Sierra Easton, by the way, who I'm from now on, because for whatever reason I find it the funniest thing in the world to call her Sierra Dawn Easton.
okay.
I think she is by far the most responsible person on that pre-jury trip, I would say.
Oh, easily.
But yeah, I'm definitely with you. Like, I would happily exchange this season's jury Ponderosa, no matter who is on there, in exchange for all of those camera people and edit team going down and following the pre-jury trip instead. I think that is an entire CBS show that you could run. It's just that group of people traveling around the world together.
Yeah, that would top the Dragons from Heroes vs. Villains, like the all-time greatest Ponderosa. Yeah. I know Malcolm tweeted out that apparently by this stage at Ponderosa, Tony Hill had already like broken Caleb's finger somehow in like a game of soccer or something. Like, Tony was just doing Tony things apparently. And if there's one person I want like a Jenny Cam style feed of 24/7, it is Tony.
I heard Malcolm call it football, which in America is not soccer, Dom.
Well, same difference, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're definitely right, though, that pre-game or pre-jury Ponderosa, I would say, has got to be the place to be as far as like the best stories of this season are going to go down. Like, I don't think anything interesting is happening on the island by comparison.
Absolutely. So do we have anything more about this red/orange tribe at this point?
Well, I guess if they do end up losing the next challenge, who would you say would be in trouble there?
My money would be on Ceree, sadly, but yeah. She knows that she's a marked woman and that they're coming for her eventually. And the thing is, though, like, maybe Ceree and Brad were secretly close back on original Nukem. We just never heard anything about it, because again, this is something that came out of JT's exit press, that his take, and again, JT, maybe not the most reliable narrator these days, but his take was that it was Andrea and Ceri who are on the outs of the original Nuku tribe, and that the power structure there was JT, Ozzy, Sarah, Brad, Sierra, and Debbie, which is a kind of eclectic mix.
Weird.
But now that JT's gone, you still have most of that in place. And then on this tribe, you have Ozzy there. You have, Ozzy's on the other tribe, but you have Sierra still here. And then maybe that's how things come together. Maybe at the merge, Sarah, Ozzy, and Debbie just rejoin this group, and that's the new thing that people have to worry about.
Yeah, I would guess that based on the way that all of these other pre-jury votes seem to be going, whichever of Aubrey or Ceri does a worse job getting in the good graces of Brad Culpepper and Troy Zan and Sierra Don Thomas is probably going to be the one who ends up going here if they end up having to go to a vote.
And isn't that an uplifting thought?
Yeah. Isn't that the way that God intended Survivor to be played? Whichever of Ceri and Aubrey can be at the mercy of Brad Culpepper and company. I think that's exactly why we are all are tuning in. I think that's probably going to do it for the red, potentially orange tribe this week. Let's go into, before we get into this other tribe, I guess let's get into Debbie is the person who draws the empty wrapper. She does not get a buff in hers, and that means she is going to Exile Island. According to Jeff Probst, it is Exile Island where she will live alone. Some fake news here from Jeff Probst. It is neither an island nor will she be alone. She is going to be joined on this fully stocked boat by Game Changer fan favorite John Cochran, of course, our friend of the show, your winner of Survivor, Kara Moen. I've heard Kara Mayon. Did you see that typo, Dom? They typoed his thing.
Yeah, after that and Taval, whoever's in charge of the official lettering this season has really got together.
My Taval shirt still isn't here. It said 3 to 5 business days for shipping, and it still hasn't arrived. And I was hoping I would have it for Wednesday night so I could wear it on the final night that Tavua would be a tribe.
I guess that was some fake news as well. Yeah. But some would argue this is maybe a worse punishment than having to live on some rain-soaked island by yourself. I would not say that, because Cochran is a lovely fellow. But what did you make of the entire concept behind this twist, and were you surprised that it is Cochran?
I mean, certainly in the moment, absolutely. I was like, oh my god, Cochran, I didn't see that coming at all. But in retrospect, I think it makes a ton of sense that it would be Cochran.
I don't think the smart money, or really any money at all, was on it being Cochran, but in the moment, it's of course, how could it be anyone but Cochran, really?
Right. No, because you have Jeff Probst saying in the preview for the next week, you're going to go live on Exile Island by yourself. I thought it would be someone to help them deal with that kind of situation or something along those lines. Had I known that it would be you're going to get a strategy session with someone, I think Cochran would have been very near the top of the list.
Yeah. Were you happy that it was Debbie who ended up joining him there? Because I feel like based on all the possible pairings, there's a lot more that could have been done with this.
No, I was not happy. I wish it was someone who either did not know who Cochran was, or that it was Zeke or Michaela and Cochran wouldn't know who they were. I really wanted that to happen.
So I was sad for Aubrey that she didn't get to meet up with Cochran finally and meet her hero. And I was sad for us that we didn't get to see Ozzy getting lectured by Cochran on how to win the game properly.
Oh my. Okay, either of those would have been better. I don't think there's any chance, realistically, unless they got the DVDs in pregame Ponderosa of one of his seasons, that Haley Ford or Sierra Don Thomas would know who John Cochran is. Is Sarah Lacina a fan of the show? Would she know who Cochran is? Did she watch it before she was actually on the first time?
I think so, but yeah, I guess there's some Andy Kaufman-esque appeal to seeing Haley just sit there while Cochran lectures her and is who the hell even is that?
Right, he pulls up in the boat and she thinks it's some random producer or something. She doesn't know to react like it's some big deal. Yeah.
It's some random Survivor fan and this is his make-a-wish,
No, I mean, you nailed what would have been by far the best one, which is Cochran getting to lecture Ozzy about how to play great Survivor. That's no question even the best timeline. Yeah.
I am sad that they didn't rig it so that Ozzy, drew the empty buff and had to meet that fate.
Yeah, that would have been absolutely incredible. So I guess let's get into how this goes. It was very funny hearing Rob talk about how Cochran had heard Debbie's version of the whole encounter with Brad the previous week. And so when he saw it on TV, he was like, whoa, 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 this isn't at all what I had been anticipating. He thought Brad was a monster. And it's actually funny that I feel like maybe the most damning thing against Brad Culpepper all season is Cochran kind of making fun of or like belittling him a little bit during this segment. I feel like that's the worst we've seen anyone say about Brad Culpepper other than Debbie.
And I think we're clearly not, I think we're clearly meant to understand that that's Debbie in this like game of Chinese whispers, and the version of events that Cochran heard was not actually what happened. And this contrast between Brad and Debbie, whenever it occurs, always makes Brad look so much better. And that's, yeah, if this becomes a recurring thing, then pile on the money to the Brad winner edit, because that's you know, that's perfect for him.
Yeah, by the way, for anyone who missed it, in our recent Survivor Supreme Court deliberation podcast, I'm just now remembering, I declared Cochran the number three most dominant win, removing any like external season contextual factors, like disregarding his first time around, like just purely strength of his winning game, pillar to post being in charge of that. I think Cochran, one of the all-time underrated winning games. Like, sir, I don't think underrated player in general, but certainly his winning game is massively slept on as far as how dominant that was.
I could co-sign that. And listening to Cochran here, and especially in his, he had this secret scene where he spoke about how much of a pleasure it was to meet Debbie, and he thinks that Debbie could be a serious contender to go on and win the game now. I wasn't sure if that's how he seriously felt, and he just didn't want to be offensive, or if this is some like Kim Spradlin-esque political maneuvering that everyone kind of sees through, but still gets taken in by anyway.
I think Cochran is going to say that no matter how he feels, but I think he is very, very good at, like, I think that's how he is a lot of the time. Like, I think his default, like, while we think of him as this kind of like self-deprecating and generally kind of like brutally honest guy, I think he is fantastic at that kind of finding a way to say something nice about someone.
Yeah, Denise Stapley was saying on our app that Cochran, if he ever leaves screenwriting, and please don't deprive him of any more of the Millers, obviously, but if he does, that he could become a pretty good therapist, and I can believe that. That's, you know, he feels like he has the right temperament for it.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, he should have gone to med school so he could go and do that instead of law school, where I feel like he would potentially get run over in court because he's so nice and so willing to wanting to keep things on good terms with people.
Finally, there was some speculation that this is setting Cochran up to have some kind of occasional or even permanent role in the show. Like, is this him being groomed to take over when Jeff Probst finally retires, or do you think there's some like larger scheme going on here?
I certainly hope so. I certainly hope that they are potentially like grooming Cochran to take over for Jeff. Like, I would love whatever efforts are being made to ensure that this can go on even longer. Even if Jeff says he's done with it, I don't think Jeff can go on forever, even if he is Richard Alpert from Lost. And Cochran, I think, would be a totally suitable person for that. Like, he is someone all of the fans are going to love, and anyone with any kind of decent, half-decent memory will remember Cochran if they saw either of his seasons. He's a very good speaker. I think he is no longer at the point where he would be rattled by dealing with other players at Tribal Council. Like, I think he's definitely a good enough friend of all of the producers at this point that would make a ton of sense for me.
Yeah, I think it would be a very controversial choice, and all the people who threatened to quit watching the show repeatedly over the past 10 years might actually do it if Cochran replaced Jeff, but I could get on board.
I think you're going to certainly piss off a decent percentage of Survivor sucks, but fuck them, so who cares? And I also, my concern would be, is Cochran an assertive enough personality for the next generation's Boston Rob to take seriously as a game runner?
That's the thing. You don't want a Denise whose job it is to be a responsible therapist. You want the Jeff Probst show version of therapy, where it's interrogation and getting these answers out of people. And
right.
I don't know if he's
packed
cut out
into
for
neat
that.
Little 6.5 minute segments.
Right. Now that we've seen all of this play out, I don't know if it was a good idea, but I'm shocked that they haven't tried this already at some point, and this isn't already a staple, you know, fixture of every single season.
Well, it is certainly something that they've been doing on Big Brother for a while. Like, they put Dan into the Big Brother Canada house or whatever. They put Dr. Will into every season now to make sure the jurors don't mess it up too badly. Like, pretend this is a game for one night.
they put Jesse Godders in there. Yeah. I'm surprised we haven't seen like 10 prior cameo appearances to Ozzy from Ozzy before this season, or just something like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, if this had been a season that Ozzy wasn't on, I would imagine that if someone had been sent and we had found out that they were going to get help on Exile from someone, Ozzy would have been one of the top picks. Of like, of course you would want Ozzy more than anyone to come out there and help you if you were in, you know, Debbie's position that everyone else thinks she's in.
Well, what are the chances that we see Joe Anglim coming in on a boat at some point in Survivor 36 or 37?
This may be a hot take, but I really feel like Joey Amazing will not stand the test of time the same way that Ozzy and Malcolm, and granted these are people who played 3 and 4 times rather than 2, but it never seemed to me like Joe was going to be that pantheon of mega all-time, the fangirls are going to remember him forever kind of player. Like, I think maybe it was because he played back-to-back and it was, you know, 2 and done in the span of a year, and they both went pretty similarly for him. I don't know. I just, for whatever reason, felt like probably because he was so much like the ones who had come before him that he didn't really stick out to me the same way that those who had come previously did. Like, he didn't have enough of his own signature kind of thing, as far as I could tell.
So you think he won't stand the test of time with the fan base at large, or among that segment of the fan base that goes wild for him and people like him?
I think...
Or, excuse me, for guys like him.
What I mean is, I don't think they would consider him, even a year from now, someone that the fans would recognize enough to bring back. Like, I know he was one of the very few locks to make it in for Second Chance directly on the heels of Worlds Apart. But if we're talking, it's Survivor 38 and someone's coming out to Exile Island to help you, I don't think most people would, they would maybe remember him if he still had long hair by then, once they saw him and saw some clips of him from back in the day. But I don't think he would be near the top of the casual fans list.
That's interesting. We should arrange some kind of long bet on that to resolve in, you know, 2.5 years when I'm sure this will be something we see every season.
I don't think it will even be close that seasons after this, and I know both Ozzy and Malcolm have the benefit of playing more recently now than Joe, I bet both of them get referenced or appear on the show far more often than Joe ever does.
I hope eventually they start mixing it up so it isn't only like Cochran and Boston Rob and so on, but like someone goes out to Exile, or even they win a reward and they get a visit from a former Survivor player and it ends up being like Cass or someone who's just like loathed by large segments of the audience.
Where they like it again, to take it back to Big Brother, like where you open Pandora's box and Ian thinks he's getting like coaching from someone great and it's Rachel Riley yelling at him for half an hour or whatever it was.
Like you have three doors and Jeff pulls one back to reveal Cass, and then it's like, okay, behind one of these other doors is a car. Do you want to keep? Do you want to switch? Like, there's lots of ways you could mix this up.
Yeah, well, let's definitely not skip over bringing with him. Cochran takes this thing from production that contains 3 game-changing advantages that Debbie is going to get to choose between. Let's run through these choices. This has been a very hot point of discussion this week just because of so little else going on strategically, I would say, where the 3 choices are Debbie can choose either an advantage in the next round's tribal immunity, so whichever tribe she ends up on is going to get a leg up in that immunity challenge. She can pick a kit to make a very compelling fake hidden immunity idol, or she can pick an extra vote. And I think, importantly, unlike every other extra vote we've seen before, people would not know that she had this extra vote, which I think is a much different beast than having an extra vote that everyone knows about.
Well, Steven had an extra vote that no one else knew about, and they didn't do him much good.
They knew he had an advantage.
Okay, sure. But I just had to get that in there. But so for me, the obvious choice is the extra vote, and I know Cochran said that when he and Debbie discussed it, both of them immediately went to the extra vote, so there was no real like debate to be had there. But do you think there is an argument for one of the other choices?
I think there is an argument for both of the other choices. I actually think all 3 of these choices have some very serious pros. Like, I think, frankly, I'll start with the fake idol kit, which incidentally, for the Survivor Think Tank fans out there, this is the idol that does nothing. This is them handing you an idol. And you can make this, I would imagine, you can make a very compelling idol with this kit to the point that it might as well have been made by production. It just doesn't have any powers. This is something I've been dying to see in the games for years.
Right, but so this fake idol, or the useless idol as conceived by you and the think tank and so on, does the person who finds it know, do they know that it doesn't do anything?
Yes, or... of course. And if, in this case, she would know that it doesn't do anything. I think the bigger value in this potentially, and this is not just for this season, but for all seasons future, if you are out there on Survivor, knowing that production is now willing to give the players kits, even in a weird context like Exile, it is at least in play that someone could have a fake idol kit. Any idol I see from this point forward, especially, you know, if I'm Debbie, and then I would tell everyone else, like, all idols are fake until you can show me the parchment. There is no reason that I would, not no reason, like, there are certainly, if I, you know, help you find it or whatever, or if I, you know, if I just really believe you, like, but every single idol should be put under tremendous scrutiny from this point forward, not only in this season, but going forward.
I wonder if, so this fake idol kit, does it set you up to make a generically convincing fake idol? So one which, outside of any context, you looked at this and think, okay, that's probably a real idol. Or is it one that actually does look like the other idols that have been played on this season? Because I think that's going to be a crucial question.
I think the idols all look relatively different, and I think this would be a kit that would help you make a very convincing looking another one that could easily pass as real. I think that's, they would not include it if it was just a bunch of like rocks and some string.
Because I think the concern would be, let's say, I know there was one season where the idols were like these little turtle necklaces, basically. So if you find one of those, and then someone comes to you promising to give you an idol, and it's just like this weird like arts and crafts style thing that they put together, then you might think, okay, well, that's, it's clearly a good effort, but I know because this has a very distinctive look that it can't be the real thing. Whereas if you know that every single idol on the season looks totally different, then yeah, it's totally in play that any idol you see could be real, could be fake, and you just don't know.
Right. No, I mean, that's why I'm such a big proponent for the idea of making all of the idols look different so that people don't have that. Like last season, all of the idols looked the same, and Jay should have known this isn't a real idol. Like if he had been paying that close enough attention, he would have known. I think that was just Jay. That was like the, you know, you're starving, you're dying of thirst in the desert, and you see the mirage of the pond in front of you. Like, what are you going to do? Not go try for it? But I would say that is a major takeaway that I would have with Debbie. I would probably not end up selecting this, but I would put it out there when I got back to camp. I was offered a fake idol kit, and from this point forward, we have to be very nervous about all idols.
So I think the breakdown of these options is, If you think all you need to do is make it to the merge and you're in severe trouble on your own tribe and you just need to make sure your tribe wins if they're not throwing the challenge, then take the challenge advantage, and maybe that gets you some goodwill and also helps you to survive for one more round. So if your situation is so desperate that you have to do that, then I think that's what you go for. If you think you're just in a decent spot, or maybe you don't know, or you think you're actively in a good position, but you need to cement that, then I think the default option is the extra vote. And then I think the fake idol comes into play if you think, like, let's say, I don't know. Like
if you're Tony, you take the fake idol kit. You want the bag of tricks to expand.
Right. Or maybe if, like, you think one extra vote isn't going to help because you're so outnumbered that making it 9-4 instead of 9-3 doesn't really do anything, but maybe having this threat of an idol can move some votes around or cause something big to happen.
Well, I would, to go back to it, I actually think for Debbie, I would personally be taking the extra vote myself, but if we want to evaluate what it's going to take for Debbie to go deep and win this game, I think the first part is just get to the merge, obviously. I think once she gets there, her equity to go deep goes up so much because her general weakness in challenge, despite however many years of gymnastics she did, her general weaknesses in challenges are going to be very good things once we hit the merge. I would be very strongly tempted to, if I'm Cochran, coach her, take this tribal immunity advantage, go back, make it clear to your tribe that you're there to help them, like you're being a good team player. You can very convincingly tell them exactly what went down. Like, that's a separate thing to get into. I would not lie about how this all went down if I was. I know a lot of people are saying, like Denise said, take it to your grave. Don't tell anyone about being on a boat, or, you know, play it up like you were starving. Don't mention Cochran. I would not rule out the possibility that this could somehow come out later, and that would not be anything I was interested in. But to go back to Debbie, I feel like once she hits that merge, the most important thing for her is to be not viewed as any kind of threat. And if she was off at Exile, I think the rumor mill is going to be running wild about what happened off there at Exile. It wasn't purely just punishment. She must have had some kind of option for something. And if you take this tribal immunity, they know what that is. They know that you took the tribal immunity. There's no way they gave you an advantage, not immunity, but the advantage in the immunity, and also a clue to the idol or an idol kit or anything like that. Like, you have made it clear, this is what I took. This is my prize. There's nothing up my sleeve.
Would you assume that Debbie had some extra choice or option or something, though? Because
if she told me, yes, I would. I absolutely. Well, if she told me that story, I would completely believe her that those were the options.
Yeah, yeah. But if she mentioned nothing and just said, "I went to exile. It was awful. I don't know how I survived. But I had some like coach-esque transformation and I came back." Would you think there was some missing ingredient there, that there was some game element that she hadn't told you about?
No, but in Debbie's position, I would be nervous that later on in the game, someone else would go to the exile boat and my spot would be blown up. I don't know that they won't.
Well, no, because you know, well, okay, so exile came into play this time because of this swap that happened. Maybe they could resurrect it, bring it back for some other occasion, but like, I would think this is a one-off thing.
I would imagine so, but I wouldn't be positive, and is a game ending. Like, if I'm telling my closest allies I was out there starving, they will never trust me. That is the degree to which I am an advocate for be honest in every opportunity, like as often as you can be honest.
I think this is something you can get away with, but
anyway. You probably can. No, you very realistically probably can. It would probably not backfire. When it does backfire, that could be a drastic disaster for her.
So about the challenge thing. So you might think, I know that I'm coming back onto the tribe that lost this challenge. So this tribe is likely to be weaker and in greater need of that challenge advantage. And so also, like, if I need my tribe to win for me to survive, then maybe that's an added case for doing that. But then also, I guess, do you think this would actually buy her any goodwill? Like, this would this actually flip anyone's vote if you said, okay, I had this choice, I could have chosen something purely self-interested, but instead I took this thing for the group? Because
it can't hurt, and the practical effect is it gives her an extra chance, like a more of a chance of not having to worry about it, of being safe until the merge.
It can't hurt, but does it actually help at all?
Like,
a material difference?
Right. I think if I was one of the other players out there, I would totally buy that she was given a choice of things, because they would not just give her, hey, you got sent to exile, here's a free advantage for your tribe in the next challenge. There's no way that's just it, and that's what she's given. She chose. Like, that is, I would completely buy that she chose that. And to go back to it, I think it is so, so critical to show, this was my prize. I did not get an idol. I do not have any other kind of advantage. This is what I picked. You don't have to worry about me now that we're merged. I think that is by far the biggest benefit.
So let's cover the immunity challenge briefly, because this ended very abruptly with red team, orange team, still undecided. I don't want to say fluking a win on this puzzle, but it felt very like unexpected. It felt like they weren't expecting it to have it solved that quickly. And it wasn't based on anything that they did, any technique that they used. It was just, they tried something, it happened to work, and there were lots of other things they could have tried, which would have tied them up for a lot longer. Like, I remember someone saying, I think that in San Juan del Sur, I want to say the premiere, but maybe some other episode, they, like, Hunapu, in a challenge that they won, took like an hour to solve this puzzle. So I think this was just a case. This isn't like Zeke finally being dethroned as the puzzle master. This is just red team getting very fortunate.
Right. That was the thing that I was interested in, is of course we flagged up last week and thus obviously jinxed it immediately. Zeke, I believe to that point, had never lost a puzzle at any point in his Survivor career. And now I'm wondering, does this count? Because it really seemed like the other team had a pretty sizable lead entering this puzzle, and that they, it was a puzzle for people who don't remember it. There were a lot of like triangle shaped pieces with like barrels cut in half. It really seemed like they just got lucky in how they originally placed. I don't know how that kind of puzzle would even work, and maybe they had like some master plan for it, but it really seems like one of those things where it's just a guess and check the combination kind of thing, and they just nailed it right away.
I'm not going to count this, but yeah, as you said, we said last week that the Zeke was undefeated until then. And so between that and me saying that I was happy for Sandra to make the merge, and I was surprised about that, we are taking jinxing commission. So if there's any outcomes you want to avoid this season, then just contact us and we can work something out.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm tempted to not count this as well, but at the same time, like, Zeke got to the puzzle and didn't win it. Like, it seemed like at least a puzzle that could have been solved very quickly, the way that Jeff was giving the other team credit for doing so. So I don't know. But let's stay on Zeke, actually, because Zeke and that team is now all going to be going to Tribal Council, and we haven't really talked about them at all. We talked about Sandra and that whole fallout, but this new blue team and just the dynamics in general, as a refresher, we have on this team Sandra, Sarah Lucina, Andrea, along with Ty, Jeff Varner, Zeke, and Ozzy here. I thought it was very fun that the very first thing we get at this new blue camp is kind of just like a passing shot of Andrea saying, "Oh, do you guys still have any coffee left?" And Sandra says, "Yeah, but just coffee," as in, "No, sorry, we ran out of sugar."
Like, long story, don't ask. Yeah,
that is the very first. It's just a second and a half clip of them introducing life at blue camp, and it was so perfect.
Yeah, but we're led to believe that Sandra and Vana immediately are on the outs here. We have this original Tavua, which was original Nuku offshoots, and they're going to sit together, and so it's going to be one of the two of them that's in the hot seat here. And I was wondering, we have this group that has been together on all three tribes now of Sarah, Andrea, Zeke, and Ozzy. And I was wondering if, and it seemed like they're pretty tight in Andrea's secret scene. She seems to think it's still very much original Mana versus original Nuku. Someone else echoed that as well. I think it was Zeke. And so I'm wondering if that's because they actually do like and trust each other, and this is an alliance that would have come together anyway, or if it is just because in a game where so many things are changing, this is just the same people that I've been with the whole time, and that gives me a sense of comfort. Because keep in mind, they haven't had to go to tribal yet. They haven't been tested in any real capacity.
Right. I think it's, hey, we keep drawing the same buffs. We keep doing pretty well in the challenges. We get along to a decent enough extent. And I think in particular, I know this is not a secret at all, but they played on Survivor Brooklyn together, Zeke and Andrea, before Zeke was ever even on Survivor, I believe. Like, this has got to be almost surreal feeling to them to have known each other outside the game and now be in a position where they're looking very good entering a merge with loyal allies in Ozzy and Sarah Lucina potentially there.
Almost surreal? Yes?
Like, surreal? Is that what we're...
You can't explain the joke. Okay, fine.
She's not involved. If it had been about Suri, if she had been any of the participants, then I would have been all over that. But it seemed like a big stretch.
It's fine. The moment's passed. I'm over it. Let's move on.
Yeah, well, I think that is at least not worth not worth forgetting about, though, is I think Andrea and Zeke have probably like an unprecedented level of weirdness going on. Like, Adam and Mari went to the same high school 5 or 6 years apart, but like Zeke and Andrea have literally played not official Survivor together, but like, and I'm not saying that, you know, bonds from that would like carry over or anything, but just knowing each other in real life, like, as we'll get to, like when we talk about this group, are they just staying together because they've been around each other and they feel comfortable? How could you feel more comfortable than that? I know this person from home.
Yeah, I mean, we met through an org like 5 years ago, and here we are now, so I guess it does matter. But yeah, I was about to say, I'm surprised we haven't heard anything about that on the show, and then I realized, of course we haven't, you idiot. Like, this is the one thing they literally can't talk about. But yeah, I would be interested to hear, when all of this is said and done, how much that preseason connection actually did end up like binding the two of them together. And if, obviously, we haven't seen the second half of this story yet, but I wonder if, like, Andrea ends up turning on Zeke or vice versa. Is that going to feel more like a betrayal because they do have this outside the game thing, bond, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, no, I would imagine that it definitely would. But let's, to get into Zeke specifically, when we were hearing about this tribe and, you know, Sandra and Varner on the outs, and really most of, as far as I can tell, this episode was giving Sandra her due, as like, this is her swan song episode, she's gonna leave. It seemed kind of like JT last week, almost like a foregone conclusion to me here. But Zeke is really the one that does almost all of the narrating here, even on a team, as you mentioned, you know, an hour ago, Andrea is someone that the audience really likes and would probably want to hear from. Ozzy's one of the all-time fan favorites. It is Zeke who is getting all of this content.
So I wonder if Zeke, we said, you know, previously, we were surprised that Zeke made it out of the first episode, and now he's still here. It feels like his edit is picking up a bit in the sense that he's getting more screen time and so on. It feels like he's going to have some kind of defining moment, some defining play, and maybe that is he's the one guy who takes a stand against the Brad Culpepper menace and it fails or whatever. But I think he is going to have some kind of important role in the season.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems like on rewatching this episode, basically everything that we heard from Zeke both turned out to be right, and like we were meant to, I think, agree with it in the moment. I really think Zeke after this week, despite being on the team that was never going to tribal councils before this, I feel like now that we've seen what happens when he does go to a tribal council, I think Zeke has to vault near the top of my, like, who's looking good to win list. I think I definitely feel like Zeke is very solidly in there with a shot at this point. And Zeke also is the one who sets in motion this idea that becomes the decoy of Ty is going to be the one that we're going to tell Varner and Sandra. And this is where the episode spends a lot of the non-Sandra time, is on Ty and all of this. We've already talked about Ty and all of his idols and everything, but one thing that really confused me about this is when Ty got, like, yelled at for spilling to Varner that Sandra was who they were actually targeting, shouldn't Ty's question have been, well, who did they think we were targeting? Who did Varner think we were targeting? Right. Like, what were you telling him? Like, of course he should think that we're going for Sandra.
Exactly. Like, maybe the seeds for the Aussie thing were being laid before that, so they said, oh, we'll just tell them it's Aussie. But yeah, you think, like, that should be the obvious question, right? Like, well, okay, what are they thinking instead?
Yeah.
And it struck me that almost anyone would make a convincing decoy, because, like, the Aussie thing makes sense, right? Like, you want to take down Aussie before he gets to the merge, and there have been seasons in the past where Aussie maybe was not the most likable guy, or people were being rubbed the wrong way by him. And then you have Andrea, who is known for, like, getting paranoid and causing chaos, and, like, Zeke is this unknown quantity. So you can imagine almost anyone being a good decoy, but I think Ty actually is the perfect person, which is all the more surprising that he didn't realize that about himself and think, right, okay, who is in the mix instead?
Right. I think I don't know if this was intentional or not, but the one name that I would leave off that list is Sarah Lacina, who we've talked a little bit about in previous podcasts, is suddenly emerging as one of the people to keep an eye out on. But I feel like I went into this season thinking about Sarah, okay, if she can just keep her head down and just not ruffle or rustle any feathers, don't do either of those things, I think she could be in very good shape to just kind of hang out and be viewed as a good person to bring in on whatever the plan is. She's good in challenges. She's probably going to be safe pre-merge, but I don't know if she's able to do that. I don't know if she's going to be able to get over having played with Tony before. We see a lot of people, whoever won their first season tends to rub off a lot on them. To Sarah's credit, she seems to be doing a very good job of that. I would say she is the safest person in this tribe entering. Maybe that's a weird thing to, or like a weird way of framing it, but it really seems to me like we're probably going to, it's going to be a while before Sarah ends up leaving here.
And not to discredit Sarah, but it feels like she can just, like, play on easy mode at this point, right? Because any potential conflict with Tony is as long been a moot point now. And there are always bigger priorities that are coming up. So, like, Sandra and Varner, and then Ty doing his thing. And if it feels like Ozzy, maybe his name is getting thrown around too. No one's even talking about Sarah, either in a good way or in a bad way, it seems.
Well, do you know why that is, Dom? It's because her social game is phenomenal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I wonder if there's some truth to that. Or, like, is it because her social game is that good? Or is it just, like, anyone with a even remotely passable social game would be perfectly fine in the spot that she's in?
Well, to make a comparison, I think she's in, like, the Sandra heroes versus villains spot of, like, you're on no one's radar. You know, even Sandra being a winner was on no one's radar. I think she has a lot more going for her in the early game than Sandra did in heroes versus villains as far as why people would want to keep her around actively. And now I think she's just in a great spot to hang out and let things go on around her. And as long as she's not actively pissing people off, I think she should be in a really good spot.
Yeah, and I know she was being talked about as a possible, like, winner candidate early in the season, and it felt like every other episode she would just drop off the face of the earth, and you would think, okay, well, that's surely the end of that. And then the next episode she would have just enough to, like, keep her afloat to the point where, like, we're still having this discussion now in episode 6, 7, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's going to be the thing. I wonder if Sarah is going to have a heroes versus villains Sandra-esque story where, like, she's really not there for the first part of the season, and then she comes into her own later.
Yeah, I definitely think a lot of things, not only for Sarah, but I think that is at least in play for a lot of people. And, like, to go back to what you were saying, yeah, I think this is an historically great setup for her entering this season, especially when Tony leaves super early, to just not be on anyone's radar the same way that we've been talking about since before the game even started for Haley Ford and Sierra Don Thomas. But that's going to be the case for some people in every single returning player season, and there's no reason that when it's you should do anything to play your way out of that. That is right where you want to be. Like Kelly Wentworth the time before, playing it perfectly as far as I can tell for Sarah. So definitely excited to see where that ends up going. I guess let's get into just all of this pre-tribal calendar Council and Tribal Council set up. I guess one question that I had is before Sandra starts to humble herself a bit, we do get one last, the queen stays queen. I'm just going to be here. You know, give me a couple days. I'll be running the show here. I was wondering, we've seen her say the queen stays queen probably about 10, maybe more than that, times over the course of this season, and that's just what made the edited version of the show for these 5 or 6 40-minute episodes. What is the line on the number of times that she actually said that out there on the island? Like, 100? Is that a fair guess over the course of her, like, 15 days or whatever?
I would say it's exactly however many confessionals she had. And I think, like, if I was her and I'm in tune with my branding, I would just be working that into every single confessional just to make sure it gets on air. So, you know, we lost a challenge today. The queen stays queen. we're running low on rice. The queen stays queen. Adios. Just blanket coverage every single time.
Yeah.
That has become her catchphrase now. So a good job to her on that front, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. I'm wondering if she was doing it so much because she wanted it to be like a recurring thing, and they just went way harder than she was expecting. Like, she wanted to give them opportunities to use it at a bunch of various points and just kind of weave it in subtly over the course of the season, and instead they just went for it at every single chance they had.
Well, when I think of Sandra, I think subtlety. So that's on point.
Yeah, absolutely. So where were you at as you were watching this? Did you think that there was a chance that Sandra might stay? Because to me, this, as soon as we weren't getting those confessionals that she would get all of the times they were trying to make us think she was about to leave, she was getting more, you know, this is the first time I've ever felt nervous. She comes into Tribal Council. Jeff, I think it's me tonight. We get a lot of just laid over footage, like there as they're at camp. Sarah starts off with a confessional about how amazing of a player Sandra is, which then smash cuts to Ozzy on the beach saying, oh, we need to get rid of Sandra. She's just too good. This very much felt like whatever the opposite of a coronation is, like whatever the death version of a coronation is.
Yeah, it was a tribute, I think. She wasn't getting buried by any means. But it did feel very obvious, even from early in the episode, that it has to be Sandra's tribe. Whatever that ends up looking like has to go to Tribal this episode. And when they do, it soon became clear it's probably Sandra going home, or at least she's going to be in danger. So that matches what I think a lot of people have said about the season, which is like, even though a lot of the individual votes maybe are unpredictable, like you couldn't see the Malcolm thing coming, that was truly Red Wedding-esque. A lot of the setup has felt a bit kind of going through the motions, like, okay, it's obviously going to be this tribe, and the only question is who from that tribe is going home.
Right, but I mean, I think I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with living in a world where when every episode, essentially, is going to end in a tribe going to Tribal Council and voting them out, as long as they are still somewhat committed to telling a coherent season-long story, I'm fine with it being almost like much more episode-by-episode storytelling. That's totally fine with me. I am all about – it doesn't bother me that much if I can tell ahead of time which tribe is definitely going to Tribal Council, as long as I have a reason to believe that it could go a number of different ways there. So that would be my main what I would be looking for, I guess, and as far as how they're editing this season. I don't need it to be totally balanced or whatever as far as, oh, who's going to win this challenge. I really don't care. So I guess the only other thing that I wanted to get into before we just give Sandra her proper send-off, of course, Dom, is Ty, once again, at this Tribal Council, not his best venue, I would say, for Ty here. I'm wondering, was this maybe even the worst Tribal Council we've ever seen from someone, where he should be completely safe with two idols in his pockets, probably. But instead, he is pow-wowing with the people who are clearly on the bottom. He's openly targeting Ozzy, only to realize he doesn't even have enough people there to do that. Jeff's not even asking him questions, and he's burying himself in these 6-foot-deep holes. What are you thinking about Ty here, and just how bad this was? Am I overreacting?
No, it was remarkable, and there just seemed like there wasn't even any impetus for it. There was no like one comment that triggered this whole like cascade of stuff for Ty. It was just Ty burying himself, and I think it's, at least from what we saw, and it's hard to rank it alongside other Tribal Council blunders, because it seemed like it didn't really matter, at least right for now. I mean, I think there are going to be consequences of this, certainly. Like, Ozzy is not going to take kindly to his name being brought up in that way, but in terms of like stuff that didn't end up affecting anything, it's got to be up there with the worst. Yeah,
right. I think people would say, you know, a much bigger tribal council blunder is anyone who got voted out with an idol in their pocket. Like, not playing that is a much bigger like tangible blunder than Ty kind of talking his way when he's still in the game and still has his two idols.
So I would distinguish between like the things that you do in terms of, okay, who do I vote for? Who do I pay the idol for? Where there are lots of famous blunders that come into that. And then also just the process of tribal council, like talking, not giving too much away with your answers, not giving other people rope, or like not giving yourself rope to hang yourself with, to butcher a catchphrase. Like, and so, yeah, okay, Ty correctly didn't play his idol, so props to him there, I guess. He didn't get himself voted out. But just in terms of how he carried himself, yeah, this was tough to watch.
Right, I think this is, as far as what I would be looking at, is just unforced errors at Tribal Council. It seems like this was just littered with it. And it really seemed like it stemmed from, like I said, just a non-question from Jeff. And I really think it was Ty struggling to come up with what he was trying to say, and then he paused for a minute and Jeff like jumped on that pause. And there's a famous, I think it's, I'm almost positive it's Mark Twain quote about there are no words as powerful as a well-timed pause. And we saw the same thing with Ty and Suri in the very first episode. And I think when he's trying to come up with some kind of answer that it's probably the weakest part of his whole game, is he gets caught, much like I'm doing right now. He just stumbles over his own words, and instead of defaulting to some kind of easy thing to get out of it, he has to keep diving deeper and deeper.
Yeah, this would be my undoing at Tribal for sure. Like, I would just like look at something the wrong way, or like give this pregnant pause for half a second too long, and everyone would be all over me and I wouldn't know how to handle it.
No, this would be your undoing, is, at least according to all of the photos I saw of you at Live Know-It-Alls, is you don't smile. You don't smile in any socially obvious situation to smile, and people would all think you hate them.
It's not like I'm frowning at people, like looking angry. I just, you know, anyway, we don't need to go into that.
Okay. Well, I guess what we should go into then, Dom, is Sandra, who now is, you know, she gets the tribal council. I think I would expect for her to get, and I would have expected it to happen much earlier into this season. She gets kind of this swan song episode, this tribute, I guess, potentially, where everyone even applauds as she ends up leaving and getting her torch snuffed. What are we thinking now about Sandra, who, to go back to it, like, I can't believe how far she went into this game. And I to dive into it, I really feel like I have seen more out of Sandra this season alone than I did out of both of her wins combined.
Yeah, I believe I said at one point that the ideal place for me for Sandra to go out would be like late pre-merge, because then no one could make any excuses for the outcome. And now here I am making excuses for the outcome. I stand by what we said last week about why we have partially changed our view on her, and it's to me that stuff is not erased by the fact that the next week there was another swap and she swapped badly and she went out again. Like, that's just how it goes sometimes, and I don't think that there was anything that quote unquote a better player could have done in this situation to get themselves out of it. Like, this is just how it is and how everyone knew it had to be.
Right. No. I mean, this is. As inevitable as Richard Hatch and All-Stars. Like, I can't believe I keep saying it because it continues to register as just unreal to me that she survived, what, 4 votes before actually getting voted out? Like, I would have taken way the under on 2.5 entering the season, like how many votes she'll actually get through, how many tribal councils she'll survive. I think it's incredible that she made it this far, and it was a total inevitability to me that this was going to eventually happen for her. I think she handled it really well. I think everyone around her handled it really well. I think like that round of applause was definitely deserved. And it seems like in her exit stuff, she's being the Sandra that I would expect to see were she not the eventual winner of a season. Like, I think she's been funny and giving everyone what they want in the exit press. I think it is funny that she's apparently like mad at the people who have taken any issues with how she ended up playing the game this time. And I think that's almost defensible, where like, what is she going to do? Like, that's what it has to keep coming back to for me, is I really feel like there was nothing Sandra could have done. And for me, just seeing her finally, really want to actively pursue getting herself a better position in the game was a tremendous weight off my shoulders. I have never liked being the anti-Sandra person. Like, I'm not doing it just to be a dick. I'm doing it because I feel like I have to be honest about what I see in those first two games, and that doesn't change for me. Like, even seeing this now, I think she was playing this way because she finally could play this way. Like, she finally could try to play more like the Boston Rob kind of game, which I don't think she ever has been in a position to be able to do her first two times. But that does not change how I view her first two times. Like, in general, I'm now probably higher on Sandra as a player, but she's still totally backed into those two wins as far as I'm concerned.
Had to end on that note.
Well, yeah. That's it. Like, she prior to this season would I understand. Like, I totally understand how crazy this is going to sound to most people probably listening to this podcast. But I would not, in the you have a gun to your head and you need to pick someone to win as a first time player against other random first time players, Sandra 1.0 would not be in my top half of Survivor players, and probably not even close.
Oh, come on. Let's not rehash like the exact placement or whatever, but I think that's hyperbole kicking in. I mean, she
certainly would not be in my top 100.
I'm not going to ask you to name the 100 people better, because we're going to be here all day and, well, all night now, I suppose.
Rest assured, I could easily go through every single season of Survivor and find three people that I would rather pick as a first-timer with a gun to my head than Sandra, without problem.
You should record a podcast. It is just you just monologuing doing that for like 2 hours and see what kind of reception.
No, I mean, I remember I said a while ago, like, there are 20 people, there are close to 20 people that I would pick before Boston Rob in that scenario. And I went through and listed them on Twitter, like the 20 people that I would pick before Boston Rob.
Okay. Well, look, 20 is a lot different than 100.
Based on, and again, like, I don't want to end with more Sandra bashing. Like,
yeah,
I,
yes, coming, you do.
Coming away from this
getting
season.
Getting it out of your system.
Coming out of this season, I am much higher on Sandra than I ever otherwise would. That said, Sandra,
okay,
okay, I'll end it there. That's okay. Yeah. Nothing else said. It's okay. Sandra, Yas Queen Slay, Queen stays Queen. Adios, everyone else. Greatest of all time, obviously. That's my final statement on Sandra. Dom, I guess, any other takes as far as this episode that you want to get into before we just talk about who's looking good or looking ahead or anything like that?
So a quick fashion segment. So I know Aubrey has been rocking the jean shorts for a few weeks now. Andrea's gone to the next level. These are like level 2 jean shorts. She actually took a pair of jeans, cut the shorts part out, and like wore the legs. So are these, what would you even label those?
Okay, so this was my theory about this, is Andrea with the jeans, like she cut Daisy Dukes out of them basically, but kept the pants. Is it gets cold out there, man. Like, of course, you're not going to just throw them away. You want to put them on. Like, I'm pretty sure in Second Chance, Jeff Varner cut the sleeves off of his dress shirt, but would still put them on at night, like to pull them over to stay warm. I think that's probably a pretty standard Survivor move, is cutting up your clothing and keeping the certain parts of it just for night.
I know. It feels like if you do that, you're not protecting the area that you would most want to keep cold or avoid being cold. Like, it's I love the fashion statement. I just don't know how practical it really is.
I don't know. I think any extra layers that you can get on yourself when they don't have pillows and blankets out there, Dom. They're sleeping on the beach at night. There are bugs. Like Aubrey, well, to go back to Aubrey's fashion, like she puts her buff over her ears to keep the bugs out of her face. Like,
I mean, Debbie had pillows and blankets this episode, right? She had a whole probably like king-size bed, I imagine.
How do you pronounce the thing that she slept on? I feel like there would be a weird British pronunciation of this word.
I didn't see what it was, but there probably is a weird British word for it.
Hammock. How do you pronounce that word?
That's just a hammock, yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know. You say Scott Pollard or like weird. There are certain words that seem to give you guys issues for whatever reason. I don't know. So I guess...
Scott Pollard gives many people issues, okay? We don't need to dwell on that.
That's very true. So, Dom, I guess looking good for me at this point, I would still say Brad Culpepper has to be at the top of my list still. And I would have Zeke there as my very clear number 2 at this point. And I'm believing now. I trust Edgick, I suppose, I'm seeing what they apparently are trying to coerce me into seeing with Sarah Lucina. She is on my radar for sure now.
You're Lucina? No, that's not even... Okay. Fine. Yeah, I think Sarah, I mean, if I had to list my top however many people, I think Brad, Sarah, is Haley still up there for you? Because there was really nothing from Haley this episode, or Sierra, really.
Yeah, no, Alan, Haley, and Sierra, I would say they would definitely still be up there for me, potentially even ahead of Zeke and Sierra in that pantheon with Brad Culpepper, where even if they were to go on to win, I would very much expect them to get some quiet episodes pre-merge. Like, that would not, I would be shocked if they were visible in every episode. So they're definitely still on my radar to essentially the same degree they were last week. I'm never going to be alarmed if they go quiet the same way I would be about certain other people. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it feels a lot like process of elimination. Like, I think, okay, this person certainly can't win, or this person, or this person, and then who's really left at the end is, I think Brad has an actively good edit, I don't think anyone else really jumps out at, okay, this is like my top contender, everyone needs to be watching this person.
Yeah, I'm with that. I think there's still a lot left to be seen as far as how this whole season is going to play out. I think that, you know, the way the storytelling has been going this season, I think we could definitely be in for some surprise bigger characters as we hit the second half of this season. Dom, anything else that you want to get out there this week?
I think that'll do it.
All right. Well, I suppose you guys can be following Dom on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. You can email us domandcolin@gmail.com.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if I will be here next week. So in my absence, just be nice to each other. Okay. Just stay calm. Be nice. That's all I'll say for now.
All right. Well, congratulations to you on coming across as the much more sympathetic Sandra figure this episode. Mission thoroughly accomplished. I suppose we will see you guys back here, or at least I will see you guys potentially back here next week. Enjoy your time once again going abroad. That's going to do it this week. Take care.